Hello, everyone. Y'all look good. You look spry. Still early. All right, so while everybody is finishing up taking their seats, I'll quickly introduce myself and the rest of these gentlemen behind me. My name is Lindsay Barr. I am the founding partner and CSO of DraftLab Sensory Software. I used to work for New Belgium Brewing Company, where I was a sensory and consumer research specialist. So Chris and I go back from our New Belgium days. And today I'm going to my BA affiliation is I'm on the subcommittee for seminars with the Brewers Association. And today I get to introduce these gentlemen. The seminar is Soft Hoses and Hard Versus Hard Pipes, Process Applications, Safe and Sanitary Design, and Limitations of Both. So it's going to be pretty nerdy, I have a feeling. Seeing these guys, seeing this group, you guys are all engineers, so you'll love it. And so a couple of housekeeping items. Please go ahead and silence your phones, and while you are silencing your phones, go ahead and scan that QR code. This is the QR code that you'll use to submit questions, and through that same app, you'll be able to upvote or maybe downvote. I think you can only upvote questions, so we can have a more engaging Q&A at the end. So go ahead and take some time to scan that. And then I'll start introducing our speakers. So our speakers today are Matt Bailey. Matt is the plant manager of Odell Brewing Company out of Fort Collins, the beautiful Fort Collins, Colorado, just north of us. A fun fact about him, I don't know if you could tell he's a climber, but he is a climber. He's a lanky climber guy, and he has a climbing wall in his house, which is pretty cool. That's a very Fort Collins thing to do. Kind of love it. Kent Taylor is our other speaker. He is the co-founder of Blackstone Brewing Company out of Nashville, Tennessee. He's going to be watching and making sure nobody falls asleep today. And Chris McCombs is our third speaker. He and I go way back. We're friends. And he is the head brewer at Coopersmith's Pub and Brewing in Fort Collins, Colorado. And he's spent his pandemic days rearing a child, which is kind of a cool thing to do. Might as well. There's nothing else to do, right? All right, so I'm going to put this back on the slide real quick in case you guys didn't have the opportunity to scan that QR code so you can submit your questions. I see a few people doing it. And then we'll go ahead and get started. Gentlemen.
All right. Thanks for the intro, and thanks for everybody making it out to Colorado. We're super excited to have you guys here and gals, and I know the three of us are excited to chat with you about a topic that we're passionate about and hope to get some good questions and engagement through our presentation. I'm going to jump right in and start talking about stainless tubing. That's a portion that I'm going to cover, and some of the pros and cons that we see with stainless tubing designs. First, I love the fact of having a clean brewery with very minimal hoses on the floor everywhere, and stainless tubing can help achieve that. The cost of ownership, I feel, is a lot lower for having a hard tubing system installed within the brewery. And then the safety is the other important factor. It has a higher pressure rating than hoses and can be, and kept clean. Cleanability is easier with stainless tubing. But some of the cons that come up a lot is that I think that can be a prohibitive thing for a lot of brewers to tackle is the initial startup cost of a stainless tubing system. And just a quick example here for comparable costs, that at least for how we purchase our materials at Odell, is we're looking around a 60 to 70% markup on an installed stainless tubing system, which is sizable. And then there's also the disruption part of running tubing through a brewery that can be hard to overcome, but I feel that it should be considered the replacement cost of a hose system and factoring that into that total cost of ownership when you're evaluating a stainless tubing system. Just to touch briefly on the differences between 304 and 316 stainless, I just want to acknowledge Ashton Lewis and his presentations he's done through the years. He's super knowledgeable. He's an expert in the area. If he was here, he would say he's not an expert, but he is. And I've learned a lot from him, so I'm not going to go into the deep details of stainless steel like he has in his presentations. But main difference that we're looking at between 316 and 304 stainless steel is it's resistant to chlorides, 316 being more resistant to chloride and corrosion pitting from chloride exposure. So what has chlorides? Chlorinated caustic. We moved away from chlorinated caustic at Odell probably about 8 years ago. Not sure the pulse on how many people still use chlorinated caustic, but would highly encourage you to move away from it. It can really cause some bad issues with stainless steel. Insulation and on your equipment and around tubing can also have chlorides present. It's something that as you're speccing out equipment or speccing out an insulation supplier to wrap your stainless steel or any other equipment in the brewery, you should make sure and specify that it's chloride-free. And then also road chemicals, something very common that happens in transportation to Colorado. If your equipment's going through any sort of road area that can be covered with snow, chlorides are very common in the chemicals they put on the roads. So it's very important to specify having that equipment covered in that transportation. And just a little sidebar here on nomenclature, when we talk about piping and tubing, even though our presentation says piping, we're really talking about tubing. It's one of the most common things I think to mix up is that the difference between piping and tubing. Piping is measured by the ID or internal diameter of the pipe, where tubing is measured by the OD or the outer diameter of the pipe. Commonly, piping is not sanitary. It can be extruded or cast. And some common examples are PVC, copper, black pipe. These are not sanitary piping. Tube, which is polished on the inside, is the most common food and beverage piping that you'll see in a brewery, and that is measured by the OD. So when you're looking at fittings and trying to source different pieces for your brewery, it's pretty simple. Just go behind the fitting and measure the tube that's behind it, and that's going to give you your proper fitting size. So you don't have to worry about all the different flanges and everything that a tri-clamp fitting or a DIN fitting or an SMS or bevel seat. You just measure the tube right behind it, and that's the size that you need. What is 3A? Kent and Chris are going to cover this in more detail, but just wanted to make a point that it's really important that you look for that 3A symbol when you're sourcing fittings and tubing to make sure that it's designed hygienically. 3A is a standard. It's not. It's an industry standard for ensuring that OEM suppliers are hygienically making their process piping and fittings. Okay, so to get into some things that you can look at during an installation into your brewery are sanitary welds. This weld is not a sanitary weld, if that wasn't obvious, but you really want to look for a weld that's contiguous and on the surface with very little discoloration and not overheated during the welding process. All the stainless welding in your brewery should be done by TIG welding with an argon inert gas purge. The welds should be fully penetrating inside with no ridges, gaps, lips, or step-ups. Pipe threads are not sanitary. That's probably a common thing that most people have in their brewery somewhere, but that is not a sanitary surface. The weld should be shiny and smooth, and highly encourage everybody to, when they bring a welder into the brewery, is to qualify each welder. They should be very familiar with this request. It's something that if you're investing into that in your brewery, you should hold them accountable. And you can ask them for a coupon, which is just a stick of pipe that has been welded together probably 6 to 10 different times. And it's a way for you to evaluate that welder and their capability and how they are they're welding the tube in your brewery. When you do ask for a welder to bring in a coupon, have them do it on site so that you can ensure that the welder that is giving you the coupon is the one that actually did the welds, because that could be a little trick that they might pull. And then also with a welding contract, if you're having a big job done in your brewery or small, ask for random inspections of those welds. It's going to be impossible to inspect every weld, but if you pick a half dozen to a dozen welds to just look at with a camera in your installation, you'll be surprised what you catch, and it's going to also help you have that peace of mind that you have a sanitary install with your investment. And with that also includes equipment suppliers. If you're getting a new brew house or fermentation tanks, ask for a random inspection of those welds within the tank at delivery as part of your contract. These are a couple of examples of some sanitary welds. Smooth on the inside, no rough surfaces, shiny, not dull in appearance, and no signs of excess heat. And another, we're going to jump into some best practices with design and layout. A common thing that you'll see in breweries is dead legs or tees. And you really never want to have a tee that is longer than 1.5 inches or 1.5 times the pipe diameter. So in the bottom left here, if you look at that picture, if that was a 1-inch pipe, we don't want the length of that tee or dead leg to be longer than 1.5 inches if this is a 1-inch pipe or tube, I should say. We also want to always have our tees or dead legs horizontal. A vertical tee or dead leg can trap air at the very top of the tee, which cannot be cleaned out. That dead space cannot be cleaned out during a CIP. And likewise, if it's a dead leg or tee that's pointing down, that isn't self-draining into the tube, where a horizontal or level tee or dead leg can self-drain and also push that air out during a turbulent CIP operation. Tri-clamps is probably another common thing with inside of in a brewery, where if you, on the picture on the left, you can see that the flange or the straight parts of the tri-clamp fitting are in parallel, where on the picture on the right, they're kind of towed in, or you can also see towed out fittings often on that clamp, often in a brewery. Tri-clamps at their pressure rating are designed to be parallel. If you're over-tightening or under-tightening, it can deform the gasket, which can have a micro-contamination issue as that gasket is deformed from over-tightening. Also, the tri-clamp fittings, or the clamp, I should say, should always be pointing down. If it's pointed, if you're swinging the tri-clamp clamp up and you're swinging that wing nut over the very top, water or any other contaminants can be sitting on that gasket and it won't self-drain out through the bottom of that clamp. One other common kind of best practice to think about when you're having somebody weld in your brewery is using eccentric or concentric reducers. Eccentric reducers are always the best application for this. It's not a huge upcharge. It's a very small percentage to go to an eccentric reducer versus a concentric. Concentric is probably what you most commonly see in a brewery, but it doesn't allow the liquid to drain out of the pipe. So on the bottom half of that pipe on the right, all the liquid will never drain out of that tube. It's just going to stay in there forever, even after a CIP. Where an eccentric reducer, like on the left, it'll self-drain and allow that tube to drain out and dry out. And then as far as your big runs with the stainless tubing, is you always want to pick a high spot in your brewery and have every point after that drain lower to like a fence panel, which is on the bottom left of this picture, or somewhere else. You never want to have the tube start high, go low, and then go back out, because that's going to create a trap within your tubing or pipe layout that is going to, again, not let that liquid drain out. The key is letting that CIP, beer, water, everything drain out and dry out in between uses. Same thing goes with hangers. If you're going a long distance, more than 10 feet, if you don't have proper spacing between your hangers to the wall or the ceiling, you can get sags, and depending on the diameter of the tubing, you can get these low points in between each hanger, which can also create another dead spot where liquid will not drain out. And then just to quickly touch base on CIP flow rates through that stainless tubing or hoses, you always want to make sure that you have that turbulent flow and not laminar flow. And I think it's pretty pretty common sense of like the difference between turbulent versus laminar, but laminar is like those steady stream things you see in like water parks. It looks like, you know, a solid piece of water. Turbulent flow is very agitated, very aggressive flow in a pipe. And to get proper CIP of tubing or hose, you want to make sure you hit at a minimum 5 feet per second. Here's the equation to calculate out what that flow rate would be for different tube diameters. And there's a table here. If you're hitting a 1-inch tube, you want to hit around 9 GPM, 1.5 around 23 GPM to make sure you're getting tubular or turbulent flow at a minimum. I think most breweries are probably exceeding this, and most are probably pretty safe with this, but just wanted to make a note in case you have that in question. So up next is Kent Taylor from Blackstone. He's going to touch base on hoses and fittings.
So a little behind the scenes here on this hero picture that I picked. So we've been working on this white paper for a couple of years, and in preparation for the CBC that got canceled, I was going through the looking for something else, and I found this in a box in my brewery. This apparently had been used at some point in our history. And I don't know what, hopefully not for beer, but I put this up here just to, a little bit of self-deprecate, just, anyway, it happens to all of us. So let's talk about the anatomy of a brewer's hose. A brewer's hose is made up of, get to the end here, you have a tube, there's reinforcement layers. Sometimes there's helix in the hoses. They're either made out of plastic or metal. And then there's a cover on the outside. The tube is the important part of what we're looking at on a brewer's hose. It can be made out of natural rubber or out of synthetic rubber. The reinforcement layers the number of layers will be dependent on the type of hose, the size, what the rating is, those sorts of things. I mentioned the helix. Sometimes there's a helix in there. Then the cover, don't forget about the cover. You need to have something that's easily cleaned, that's non-abrasive or doesn't scar easily. So these are some things to look at when you're looking at buying a hose. So one thing I've always wondered is, why are hoses 100 feet long? Why can't I get a 200-foot hose? The reason is these hoses are made by hand, and they're made on a mandrel. So the mandrels are, if you do a 200-foot hose, you've got to have a 200-foot mandrel and a way to manufacture that. And then you have to have an autoclave that's 200 feet long in order to be able to cure it. So that's one reason that hoses are limited, and the 100 feet is about where most of the manufacturers have the size of their manuals and or mandrels and the size of the equipment. Now, unlike the sanitary pipe or sanitary tube that Matt talked about, hoses are the interior diameter. So if you get a 1-inch hose, that's the interior diameter of the hose. Again, we talked about handmade. These things are all handmade. They're autoclaved. And the secret to this is the process of vulcanization, which is we drive around on our tires all the time because of vulcanization. That's how brewers, the real magic to how brewers' hoses are created. I've got a little video here that will show you how they're done. Now, this is traveling back. He's already done the blue on the left there. You can see the blue, that's rubber that's on a mandrel, and here it's up on the upper side, so they're traveling back, but they've been down and hand done that. Now, this one is a much bigger hose, but you can see how it is that they're made. And then we're coming up on one that's a little bit smaller. Again, they have assistance, but those are all done by somebody by hand. And then you can see the number of mandrels that they have to keep in stock for the different sizes, and a big-ass autoclave. And you can kind of see how long this thing runs. It runs forever. So what do you look for in a brewer's hose? Three things. 3A sanitary, you want to make sure it's got the 3A approval. You want FDA approval and USDA approval. That's fairly standard in the industry. You just want to make sure the hoses that you're buying have those approvals. Hoses that are suitable for oily products, stay away from them. And what I'm trying to do is give you some practical things based on my experience. So those applications are generally not for beer. Look for milk, wine, beer, non-oily. Those types of hoses are going to be suitable for beer. Natural rubber can be used for beer. It's typically not, more because of the CIP that we go through. Natural rubber is sensitive to acids that we tend to use. While it can be used, synthetic rubbers are typically used. Because they're more resistant to the acids. And the important thing is, what is that tube made of? You know, the rest of the stuff on it is really doesn't come in contact with our beer. So it's, what is a tube made of? Typically, it's a synthetic butyl rubber. There's a couple of additives that are made to it that gives it different ratings. But you want to look for a butyl rubber that the tube is made out of. And then on the cover, just look for a non-marking. Now, how do we actually make these things into hoses? We do it with fittings. You see the guy there on the left? I would stay away from that one. I'm not really sure how that ever got there. It's basically just unsafe, not sanitary. The one in the center probably can have some pressure on it and can be used for some type of a pressure type because it's mechanically, hydraulically formed. The one on the right are bands. I do not like banded. I just don't like banded. We have used banded hoses, and there are some places in your brewery where you may want to use banded hoses. So they're not completely useless. We have never had a banded hose that has not come apart at some point in our history. So that's one reason why I don't use them, or we don't use them for any kind of pressure. So this particular hose, all these hoses, well, the one on the left was just a piece of a hose. But the other two hoses are we currently use them. But again, they're not for sanitary applications because we need a sanitary fitting in order to make the whole system sanitary. But again, the banded hoses, I like them for blow off. I like them for non pressure type stuff. The banding tools are $150. You can buy the bands for $3 or $4 a piece. Probably worth having in order to create non pressurized, non sanitary type stuff in your brewery. So it's probably worth the investment to have that inside. You'll save a lot of money doing that. Oh, one other thing I wanted to point out. Never throw anything away. This particular hose, so the one on the right, was a sanitary hose that we cut off the ferrule, tore it apart, and then banded it and used it. So don't throw anything away. You just downcycle it. 3A sanitary, you always want to make sure that you have that on all, anything, any kind of hose system that you have. Now let's talk about the real magic and the real part of this sanitary and what makes these types of fittings sanitary, where a hose barb and a band is not sanitary. There are really only two types, and it's a whole system. And you can see on the ferrule that there's grippers on the inside of the ferrule, and there's grippers on the outside of the stem. That's a whole system that once it's compressed and locked in, It holds on both sides, holds the tube, and it also holds the exterior so that you have a good integrity in your hose. We have never had one of these things come apart. We've had them leak, and we don't do business with that company anymore. But the way that, so I brought some, if you want to see how some of these work, I brought some, stole them off of the floor today. But the way these things work, they come in two parts. When they put them together, then they lock together. So these things are a locked type thing. They're a one use. Unless you want to downcycle it and use it for something other than sanitary, it's going to be a one use. This particular one is an exterior crimped, and what the hydraulic crimping machine does is it reduces the size of this ferrule on the outside that causes it to fall into that channel and become a complete system. Then there's also the internally expanded. It actually works the same way. The difference is that they draw a mandrel through the center and expand the stem into the tube. So it's a different way of doing it besides the crimping. Now, oops, back one. I did this one, so if you want to laugh at it, you can laugh at it. But when you're the top one represents what happens on a banded. You can see that it does kind of get into the tube a little bit, but there's nothing at the end that prevents an ingress of things into there. The second one and then the third one, where it's actually the tube is pressed down or the fitting is pushed up into the tube. Many times it actually lips over the bottom, and I've got a picture of that coming up here. So this is an internally expanded, and frankly, I like the internally expanded better than I like the externally crimped. The way that you tell the difference, you can look for the witness marks. The witness marks on internally are also going to be on the inside. The outside is you can see the witness marks here on the outside. But I want you to notice, see how the tube actually comes past the stainless part? That creates a sanitary seal so that you don't get stuff up in there that can fester and ruin the next batch of beer. Just briefly on how this works, it's all done hydraulically. There's a tapered manual that's drawn through the. Here, I have one of those right here. So they draw it through the center and expand this out in into the ferrule. Again, there's some more information here. Probably not anything that we're going to go into now. Externally crimped has same process, except for you're squeezing everything from the outside such that the tube is squeezed into the stem. Which one is best? For year and so I'm an old guy, so I can talk about this. The only thing we had when we started brewing was internally expanded because that was the only thing that was out there that was 3A sanitary. It's probably been 10 or 12 years ago that external crimping came in, which is what this, which reduces the size and causes it to latch into this part here. Again, do your research, determine. It's hard to find an internally expanded on a 1-inch hose. So if you're using smaller hoses, you're really stuck with the externally crimped. Personally, I only do internally expanded on 1.5 and bigger. I just like it. I like the fact that this gets pushed into the tube and you get a really good seal. The reinforcement layers on these things are doing a lot of the work where when you're trying to compress it all, they're kind of working against you as you compress this thing down. Again, they're both 3A sanitary, so I wouldn't feel anxious about doing any of them. What do we do? So Matt talked about replacement and so how do you tell when it can be replaced? Fortunately, in the last several years, there are these, they're really boroscopes. For some reason, they call them endoscopes, which is used for a total nother, we won't even go into. But you can get these boroscopes for less than $100, and you can look at the inside of these hoses and determine. Now, this is based on experience. I'm going to go on to the next slide here. So we managed to get it into the hose, and then we pulled it out. So what I did, I bought a stainless, what is that called, fish tape, and taped it to the camera, shoved it in, and then slowly pulled it back and inspected it. This works pretty good. That stainless steel, I would only use stainless because you're looking at stainless fittings. You don't want to get anything that's going to get into your stainless. Again, less than $100, you can get that. So here is the inspection of the inside of a hose that is 10 years old. I would use this hose pretty much anywhere. It looks good. Now, I also have a picture of the end of the same hose. This was a hose that failed that we sent back and said, we need you to redo this. They over-crimped it, causing the tube to squirt out of the end. And when I saw this, we pulled it out of service. Obviously, that's not sanitary. So, again, you still need to do inspections of your hoses to make sure that they're staying that way. Hose storage. How do you store hoses? Dry is generally better. Any kind of sanitizer is going to break down over time. It's going to lose its effectiveness. Dry is better. Short term, and we leave stuff packed in PAA all the time for a day or two, but any more than that, you really need to dry out the hose. And I can give you a perfect, if you can look in this one just beyond this, this is a hose we took out of service. I said, don't use it anymore. All they did was shut it up and put it, didn't do anything. So I need to say, we're going to have to cut off 2 feet on each end because it's molded. So that's what happens if you leave stuff packed in water. Eventually, it's going to degrade. So you want to create some kind of a storage method. I think the picture on the left there is from Chris's brewery. Isn't that your brewery? The one on the left? You probably can't see it. The one on the right, yeah, I think so. The one on the right is what we did, just took some stainless and welded them to the legs. We have it, the center was high, and so that they during the link, they so that they would drain. Just think about that. If you want to learn more, later you can download this. There's some links to learning more about how hoses and stuff is made. So just to wrap up, I want to bring in something that's from anecdotal, a little bit more. It's something that happened to me. So I get a call, I think it was about 6 o'clock one night, from a buddy of mine that owns a brewery in Nashville. He says, I'm driving to Knoxville to pick up a couple of cans from two different batches. Would you run it through your lab? And I said, well, George, if you're driving to Knoxville to pick up cans, you already know what the problem is. They're bad. You've got some kind of bacteria, something in there that they're bad. What is it I'm going to tell you that you don't already know? Well, we did end up running it through the lab and tried to help them out a little bit. But I went on the further conversation and said, I have been in your brewery. You have banded hoses. They're non-sanitary. He said, well, but we burn them in for a full 10 minutes. I said, excuse me? I've never heard the term burning in. Didn't ask him what that meant because it really didn't matter. The point is, it makes a difference. And so using a sanitary connection makes a difference. So I followed up to ask permission to tell this story here. And he said, I want you to tell the folks that are in attendance that we have had very little problems since we switched to fully sanitary hoses from banded hoses. So there's some anecdotal that I will leave you with. And up next is Mr. McCombs.
Thanks, Kent. Thanks, Matt, for talking about hoses and hard pipes. I'm going to talk a little bit about other sanitary considerations, filling in the gaps on some of the stuff that we've covered. So we've talked a good amount about hoses and hard piping and benefits of both and detriments as well. Talking a little bit more detail about the pros and cons of hose liquid transfer systems. The pros, as I'm sure many of you guys already know, they're quick to install, they're relatively inexpensive, they're flexible, the cleaning setup is pretty straightforward, and you know it's easier to navigate if you have a hose sitting in front of you versus a circuitous hard piping system going throughout your brewery. The other thing that's nice is once you pop in a new tank, you don't have to shut down a system. You know, you just grab another hose and maybe a couple T's and hand valves, and you're pumping in and out of that tank. The cons, Kent's already kind of touched on these, but the hose material does degrade. The hose ends will come apart, especially during pressure spikes. And if you have external banded hoses, I've had a few of those pop off on me a few times, and that's never fun. You have some ergonomic issues to consider. If you have, you know, 2.5-inch hose for sort of larger breweries are pretty darn heavy, especially if you're packing them around with Sani in them, getting ready for a process. If you drop one of the ferrules out of your coil as you're hauling it around, it can crack a tile. That's kind of a surprise that I wasn't ready for the first time that happened to me. Sometimes it can land on your toes. That's not on the list, but that's always no fun if it doesn't hit the steel toe part. You do have a tripping hazard. You've got hoses sitting around and various, if you have, you know, say a wood beer transfer that you're doing and you have a fairly complicated hose matrix, you can have hand valves poking out. And if you're in a hurry and you're running to the end of a process to you know, pack a line or to switch over, it's easy to trip over those hoses. You need space to hang hoses, 30-foot length of hose. It's not just one of those things you can swing over the top of your tank. You know, you'll have low spots develop. And, I've worked on several projects where we've actually had to build hose racks, and they're more expensive than you think. So it's definitely something very, very important to keep those hoses dry. And especially when you're running a filter run or a centrifuge run or something like that, if you have a connection that isn't tight, the oxygen can ingress into your beer flow. And that is obviously not good. Beer staling, various problems can occur. Not to mention under pressure, it can squirt chemical up at you during CIP. Hardpipe pros and cons. Definitely the pro, superior durability. You know, once they're in there, if those welds are sanitary and solid, they're not going anywhere. They're resistant to corrosion. You can CIP and steam sterilize them over and over. You can hot sanitize them. The piping is up off the ground. It's definitely space saving, so you're not worrying about hanging hoses everywhere. Superior leak prevention. Again, just a nice solid weld. There's no substitute versus a tri-clamp or din seal. Dissolved oxygen is reduced. And you don't have those pesky hose ferrules popping off during CIP. Cons, for obvious reasons that Matt touched on, they're higher initial cost to install. Been out on the equipment, the trade floor, and been talking about the increasing cost of stainless, so that's definitely something that we're worrying about these days in the industry. There are potential dead legs that you have to consider, and that's something that can be mitigated during your design reviews. Really nice to have an isometric drawing to review while you're deciding where to put these hard pipes. The surface of the piping gets really hot during CIP and SIP, and I might have a tattoo or two as a result of this, so you'll be forgetting that you're running a hot water Sani on something and you're given a tour and you back up and you hear a little hair sizzle because you're wearing shorts. It's not a good idea. But it's definitely something to worry about. And then in that case, I think placement of piping is definitely something to consider when you're putting these in. Is it going to be hot? Is it going to be steam sterilized? And obviously less flexible. The next few slides are going to touch on the type of process connections that we have between hoses and hard pipes. The most ubiquitous is tri-clamp in the United States and North America, I would say, in general. You see some pictures there. There are two of identical, I guess, female sides that butt together with a beveled gasket on both sides. It's symmetrical. As Matt touched on, a misaligned gasket can cause problems. It can crimp down one side of the gasket and cause it to crack. It can cause leaks. It can cause, especially if it's a clamp that sits there semi-permanently, buildup can happen in there and you can have cleaning issues develop. If they are used properly, they're a very good option. I know most of you guys in here have the flip technique down, and you know, getting that lined up just right. There's nothing as satisfying as getting that flip on there and clamp down if you're in a hurry to get a process going. You definitely don't want to hurry that. You want to inspect as you're sealing things up. And they're universal. No male, female. They clamp together both sides, again, symmetrical. You do not need a special wrench. Just some gloves and PPE would be probably a pretty good idea. This particular fitting I don't have experience with personally, but it sure as heck looks like a lot of the fittings I've worked with. The Swedish, the SMS Piping Union Standard. It is a threaded connection. There's a spanner wrench, a special spanner wrench that's used to tighten down the threads, and it does seal against a flat surface, flat seal. Common in brewery where hoses are used, common for swing panels. You need to be vigilant about replacing your gaskets, inspecting them, looking at them, and with other types of connections we'll get to in just a minute, you will definitely want to take a pick and periodically inspect these, if not every time, popping out, looking behind where that gasket lives, because you'll be surprised what can get in there. The nuts require the special DIN and SMS spanner wrench. I didn't have a picture of that, but it just looks like a little, like a cammed grip on a flat piece of stainless handle. And there are male and female fittings. So you do have to have both sides. When you're designing a system, you have to have the nut side and the male threaded side. These are all, by the way, 304 and 316 stainless most commonly. DIN translates to Deutsches Institut für Normung, German Institute for Standardization. Very similar to the SMS, however, the seal is more of a D shape. And it does have a flat side and a round side. And round side is out. That is what compresses down to form your seal against the male side, or excuse me, the nut side. I've also heard these two. They've German suppliers will call them nut and cone when you're getting them from a German supplier or European part supplier. Again, you're using a spanner wrench, and there are male and female fittings. Bevel seat. This is what I'm using at Cooper Smith's right now. I have never had experience with them, but it's a dairy standard, pretty common dairy standard. It is thread, so there is a nut and cone, and male and female fittings. We use Teflon gaskets. That's the brand name for the seal type that I'll mention in just a minute. You can crank these down tight, really hard, and they seal pretty well. Again, common in smaller breweries where hoses are used. That's definitely like our little brew pub in Fort Collins. They can leak. These Teflon gaskets, they're not very compressible. You can put a cheater bar and then just really get after it and get that thing super tight. But that's never a good idea. You never want to be using a cheater bar if you can get away from it. And it requires a wrench to loosen or tighten. I just like to say at Cooper Smith's, we go glove tight. And that's usually good enough. If you inspect your gasket and it's not chipped, cracked, misaligned, warped, get that thing in there. Glove tight is usually just fine. You'll thank yourself later. Now we're going to talk a little bit about process seal materials. There are a lot of process seal materials for different industries. We've picked out some of the most common and used everywhere in different breweries. The top Buna N is nitrile rubber. The ones I'm used to seeing are blue rubber. They are very soft and flexible, malleable. They're good for processes that are taken apart on a regular basis, but they can get shredded and they can get warped. They are not as chemical resistant. Ethylene propylene diene monomer, I think I'm pronouncing that right, EPDM, is the more durable overall, more chemical and heat resistant. They're the black gaskets you see pretty much everywhere. They're a lot more rigid, but not fully rigid. Slightly higher cost per unit and excellent chemical resistance. FKM, fluoroelastomer, excellent heat and chemical resistance, very durable. And one of the things where if you have a hot side process, it's a great gasket choice for that if it's going to sit sealed for weeks or even months. those other gaskets on hot side processes can get eaten up pretty easily. So if you've got, you know, a louder tone or a wort pump or something like that, that is a good choice for that style of gasket. Silicone, excellent heat resistance, very flexible. Red, white, or transparent in color and common in lab scale. PTFE or Teflon is the brand name. Very rigid, heat and chemical resistant, and needs to be tightened down pretty hard to get it to seal. And there's just a whole other bunch of sealing materials, but these are the most common ones. So, and just a note on sealing, especially SMS and DIN fittings. Excuse me. As I mentioned, if you're using a cheater bar to tighten something down, it's too tight. You don't want to be doing that. Heating and cooling these systems, if you're getting it just glove tight or tight enough to seal, that's usually enough. And the key is to inspect your gaskets and to take very good care of them. As you're heating during hot sannies and cool downs, you can create a vacuum on these things, and then trying to get the cap off at the end of your cool down is nearly impossible. The other thing, too, is you just don't, you know, it's an ergonomic thing, it's a safety thing. I've had more than one time wrenching on a DIN fitting where my hand gets away from me because the wrench slips and I nick my knuckles on the DIN nut. And I've got, I mean, seriously, like scars all over. But now I wear gloves all the time, so I guess that might have been a youth mistake. But just definitely, you know, if it feels like you're cranking down too tight, maybe have a look at that gasket and make sure it's not shredded or flattened. That's all I got. Thanks, you guys. I know we're doing the questions via the app. I did want to just add that we're having an engineering subcommittee meetup in room 402. You guys are welcome to come by and say hi. We're recruiting. We're always looking for people who are interested in engineering. Thanks again.
All right, now for Q&A. First of all, thank you, gentlemen. It was really, really interesting. I was prepared to be bored, to be honest, and I was very interested. I'm not a brewer. I thought I wouldn't learn anything, and I learned a ton. All right, so questions. I usually look out to the audience, but now I'm going to look right here. For hard piping overhead to a packaging line with carbonated product, what's the best way to design a system to chase out small air bubbles from the high spot? Question mark. Who wants to take that? That guy.
So our preference is to push with liquid instead of a gas as a primary method. So we'll actually put. We're fortunate enough to have a deaerated water system, but a gas-to-gas purge is really hard, as everybody in here knows, like, you know, on a bright tank. So even if you're pushing with just straight water and then follow that behind with CO2, you're going to get a better purge than just a gas-to-gas purge. Hopefully that answers it.
Nice. We'll never know. The person was anonymous. All right. The hose scoping part was so cool. How often are you scoping those hoses, Kent?
To be honest, once. Well, when we were pulling together this white paper, you know, I figured there's got to be a way to look at the inside. That's when I started doing research and found these inexpensive endoscopes that you can use. Well, I did it in preparation for this. And I want to just make another comment. On that rack where you saw our hoses down, there was a white hose there that is almost 30 years old. I scoped it. I would use it for beer. I was shocked at how well that hose held up. My point is, buy good stuff. It's going to last. You're going to get service life. Now, we do not use it for beer because of its age, so we tend to downcycle. We use it only for CIP. So I would say, again, I'll give you a perfect example. So the one that we had problems with, I'm going to scope again because I had them run a full CIP. So if you see issues, you need to scope it. Another thing, a recommendation is when you're pulling it back, if you see an area
mark it, and the fish tape has actually measuring on the one that I got. Put a piece of tape, record where that was, go back with your camera, look at it again in 6 months and see if it gets worse. So that would be my recommendation.
All right. Is it a bad practice to leave valves on the ends of hoses when hanging them to dry? Do you want to take that, Chris?
Sure.
Yes, I think it's a bad idea. And the reason is that a lot of times you're going to hang it up, you're going to walk away, and you're going to go have your shift beer, and the weight of that valve is going to pull that hose off the rack, and it's going to be on the floor. One reason not to. The other is I don't like to leave gaskets in between my ferrule and the edge of my valve at all while it is being stored. You want to keep those clean and dry. That would be my take on that.
Cool.
I agree.
We have a second. Are there any upsides or downsides to DIN fittings in comparison to tri-clamps?
I believe the surface area that inside the fitting is less on a DIN fitting, the gasket exposure compared to a tri-clamp. I believe the tri-clamps, as designed, have a little bit of exposure on the inside of the pipe, and I'm pretty sure a DIN fitting has less surface area where it's more stainless that is in contact with the liquid and less gasket material.
Yeah, and then I wouldn't mind addressing, because we have both. We tend to use DIN fittings in more permanent, if you're connected to motors, on the hot side. When you're undoing things a lot, tri-clamps are the way to go. So it just depends on the frequency of usage.
Awesome. Does passivating your stainless steel pipes protect them from chlorine pittings? How often do you passivate?
I don't have the proper experience to answer that adequately, but I believe that chlorine can still deteriorate a passivation layer, is my understanding.
Yeah, I think Matt's correct. There's a link in this later. Download it. It's an hour and a half that Ashton Lewis did a web thing. It's excellent, excellent, excellent. Passivation is, I'll just give you the bottom line. Passivation is cleaning and let it dry. Now, you can use acid to force passivate it, but stainless will naturally passivate if it's clean and if it's exposed to oxygen. Because, what is it called?
Chromium.
Oxide layer, yeah. Which is,
it's chromium oxide.
Yes, which is oxygen, oddly enough.
And I would just say, this. It's a great question, and we actually, it's one of our, the technical summit action items for the engineering subcommittee is compiling a curated list of articles about passivation, because there's a lot of good ones, so keep your eyes peeled for that. It's at New Belgium, we had this discussion so many different times, and the techniques were all over the map. The frequency of passivation should be determined by visual inspection. I think that's something that you can do, have a look and see if you see a discolored weld, right. If you see dulling of stainless, it's probably time to passivate them. I have 30-year-old serving tanks at Cooper Smith's. I just recently ran through and passivated all of them. But there is a lot of good information coming your way. Keep an eye out for the resource hub.
Yeah, it depends on whether you get contamination. If you've got a welder that goes in a tank, you need to get, since they're taking what's iron? They're taking it in with them. So there's different reasons.
Cool stuff. Is there a recommendation for inspection of hard piping similar to hoses?
What?
Hard piping. Similar, like, so how do you inspect hard pipes?
Internal?
Internal, I guess.
I don't
know. It would be the same. It's with the scope also. Most good welding shops actually have the scopes for their tubes that can go a pretty decent distance, so you don't need to provide one on your own. But I like Kent's suggestion about buying one on your own so you can do random weld inspections.
Cool. I think that's the same question that Sean had as well. So when heat sanitizing hoses, can you do it for too long and damage it? So is there too much heat sanitization?
I think the short answer is no. these hoses are rated. Look at your ratings on the hoses. I mean, they're rated for a certain temperature. 250 is usually is what I look for. That's chlorobutyl is a 250 heat rating. You can't kill it. And that's the thing. Like I said, I was amazed when I looked at that almost 30-year-old hose. That thing has just been killed over the years. It was, and actually, Chris made a comment earlier is, keep it clean, keep up with it, and your hoses are going to service much better.
Just a quick add. I wouldn't, just avoiding running hot liquids through your brewery for an extended period of time is a good idea for safety.
Well, yeah, that's a different issue.
Yeah, just a thought, because you can be running and tripping over
and
something.
And he's right. You do it as you need it, but don't do it just to do it. So I'll give you just an example. When we sterilize the wortway, we have a soft hose on the other side to come back for the returns. We have hard pipe to the cellar, and then soft hose, and then hard pipe back for the We do a 1 hour wortway sterilization at 190 degrees. So that's.
And are not, we don't see any degradation.
All right. Do you allow filler metal to be used in the welding of sanitary piping? Who is our welder guy?
I mean, if you're TIG welding, you can use their stainless steel filler rod that can be used. I don't know if that's what the question is, but other than that, I wouldn't recommend any other sort of filler rod welding.
I can address that. So a properly made and improperly done sanitary weld, they're perfectly symmetrical, and you don't need filler rod in order to do it. If you've got some wonky stuff, if you've got a fillet, different sizes, which Matt showed one of his pictures, the one that was bad, that's a fillet weld. You can't do it any other way than to have filler rod. So the answer is if you can avoid it, you're going to get a cleaner sanitary weld if you don't use filler. But again, the weld has to be prepared properly, and that equipment that does that is horribly expensive. So again, that's why welders charge so much money, is because that equipment that does that is really expensive.
If the tri-clamp is horizontal, parallel to the ground, does direction of screw connection matter? It seems like a SAT question.
It does. I don't have a clue.
Who's going to get it right?
Matt, you made the comment about liquid hanging up if your handle is positioned incorrectly in the vertical position. I would just be taking a guess that I would say no.
I would guess maybe if it was pointing down, that would be best. If it was horizontal and the liquid could follow the screw down, if I try to reason through it.
Sounds good to me.
Correct. You're both correct. Random sanitary welds, you said, use camera. Is x-ray necessary, or is a visual inspection enough? I think you guys answered that, but did you want to add any more?
That's a great question. We've never actually done x-ray inspection, but I've heard of it done, and that would be like the primo top inspection. So if you wanted to go that route, that would be a great way to go.
You want to spend the dollars.
It's just going to be expensive.
Yeah.
I think that the secret is the preparation, like I mentioned before. I think the secret to a good sanitary weld is proper preparation and proper torch work. So Matt's what he said earlier, to bring or watch them. And the last time, I'm sorry, this is really anecdotal, but we have a sanitary weld we use for years. He's kind of gotten up in age. The last time we had him do work, I made him do a weld in front of me before we let him into our facility. So there's nothing wrong with that. They're used to it. Make sure that they can do sanitary welds. Watch, come behind them. Watch them. Make sure that they're purging properly. Make sure that they're back. It's called a back purge, I think. That's what it's called. Because you've got to fill the pipe or fill whatever you're doing with argon. You can't just do it out in the atmosphere. So there's nothing wrong with following behind. It's your stuff. You got to live with it for 30 years. Make sure it's right.
Yeah.
Oops.
I love a little passion.
Yeah, maybe.
Thoughts on sanitary conditions for braided tubing? For example, Oedekers, if that's how you say it, versus torque clamps, and types of barbs.
I think the question was regarding the sanitary nature of a braided food grade hose, and we have some in Cooper Smith's, and it is not the greatest. In the fitting types, you know, if it's a barbed fitting that fits into these braided hoses, they're just not ideal. And you know, with our system, it's kind of been the way we've done it for a long time. When budget allows, we will be replacing all of those hoses with the type of hoses that Kent was advertising with the internal crimp.
Yeah, and it's not so much the hose, it's the fitting. You can actually get sanitary fittings in the sizes for those smaller. I've seen braided hoses with sanitary fittings on them. So it's really not the hose, it's the manufacturer and it's the fitting.
One more point on the braided hose, they crimp and kink like crazy when they get hot. They will over time create an issue of sanitization. Again, I really want to replace all the ones that we have with proper rubber brewer's hose.
You know what I said earlier about buying the good stuff up front, and we've used that damn hose for 30 years. Not for the same thing, but you're... Anyway. Buy good stuff.
The theme of the talk, just spend the money. All right. Thank you guys for being here.
It's not as much as you would think. We just bought a 50-foot, 1-inch hose. It's less than $1,000. And that hose is going to be around for 20 years.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, speakers. Have a good conference.